looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, MGM Springfield, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, let me begin by updating you on the particulars. Red Sox are on the field right now with the Baltimore Orioles. They are in the bottom of the eighth inning. The score is Boston 5, Baltimore 1. It certainly feels as though the Red Sox are on their way to a sweep of the Orioles. This will make them 9-1 against Baltimore this season. And, oh, wouldn't it be nice to play the Orioles every day, Murray? Wouldn't it be nice to do that? 9-1 against Baltimore. Let me put that in perspective for you.
No, I don't know. Do you want me to watch this team? Because you know, I know it's good for their record and all, but if they're going to keep playing the Orioles, this team's brutal.
I mean, really, the games are dreadful to watch when you have a competition this bad. And again, I come back to the same thing. Baseball has a competition problem. But that aside, do you know what 9-1 would translate into in a full season?
161-1?
No. Good guess, though. I was going by percentages, Murray. 146-16. Okay, at this rate, if they played the Orioles the whole season, they'd go 146-16. That's just to give you some idea. Okay? 617-779-0985. Well, let me get you caught up on a couple of things that have happened in this game. First of all, Chris Sale was sent back out for the seventh inning of this game with basically about 100 pitches. I think he was just a tick below. And the Red Sox had to pull him in the inning when two men got on base. He didn't record any outs. Sale thought he had the second batter of the inning retired on a strikeout. It was a 3-2 slider that was a borderline pitch. Could have been a strike, could have been a ball. Was maybe right on the outside edge. I honestly thought it was just a shade outside. Sale did not. The batter earned a walk. Sale did not. Cora went out to get him. Sale politely, courteously gave Cora the baseball. The Red Sox infielders and Cora waited on the mound for the next pitcher. Sale walked off the mound, got to the dugout, was congratulated by his teammates, and then just before he went down the runway into the clubhouse, started yelling at the home plate umpire, got up to the top step, and said that the last call, I'm assuming, or maybe he was referring to the whole day, was quote-unquote horse bleep, and I don't need to be a lip reader to tell you that that's what he said. And I think he was thrown out of the game, Murray. Was he actually ejected?
Yeah, he was.
Okay. So Sale was already out of the game. No harm, no foul, but he lost his mind as he was going down the runway to the clubhouse. Brandon Workman came into the game. Gave up, I think the Orioles scored on a sack fly, and you have to forgive me because obviously we were on the air. So I know the Orioles scored. I'm pretty sure it was on a sacrifice fly. Workman got out of the inning. They're now in the bottom of the eighth with one out, one man on. And, Murray, let me ask you a question. Who's on the mound for the Red Sox?
Right now? I don't know. Some unnamed
Andrew
reliever.
Bailey?
No. Somebody named Justin Haley.
What's that?
Okay, so again, I didn't even know this guy was on the roster.
A distant relative of Bill Haley, of Bill Haley and the Comet.
But Justin Haley is in to pitch, and this does relate to, it relates to last night a little bit. Maybe a lot, really. And I'm going to ask Jimmy Stewart, our producer, to grab a comment that Alex Cora made following the game last night.
Of course, he was a former sixth-round draft pick of the Boston Red Sox way back in 2012.
Okay, so he's been
he was with the Twins organization for a while where he made his major league debut.
So he's been in
low ball too.
He's been in the system now for 6 years. Okay, 6 years. So Justin Haley's in the game, but this does relate to last night. And again, I'll ask Jimmy to grab a comment made by Alex Cora after the game. Eduardo Rodriguez last night gave the Red Sox another win. He's 8-1 with a 3.64 ERA this year. Eduardo Rodriguez, all things considered, has been dynamite. Absolutely dynamite. Now, it hasn't been perfect, but if I were to tell you that the number 5 starter on the staff was 8-1 with a 3.64 ERA, you'd say to me, well, who are the front four? What do you have, the same sort of, lineup, murderer's row lineup there that the Astros have at the front end of their rotation? Is that what we're dealing with? And The Red Sox are 12-1 when Eduardo Rodriguez pitches. 12-1. He himself is 8-1 with a 3.64 ERA. And yet, after the game last night, when asked about Eduardo Rodriguez's performance, his fifth win in a row, here's what Alex Cora said.
There were certain at-bats that we felt that he should have put him away. There was an 0-2 on Trumbo, and, you know, he gets a 3-2. All the 3-2 counts. He did the job. I'm not saying that we're not pleased with the result, but I feel that there's more there. There's certain games that, you know, we need our starters to go deeper, and today was one of them.
Okay, I can't tell you how much I love that comment after the game last night. Because if you've watched Eduardo Rodriguez this year, as much as he is 8-1 with a 3.64 ERA, and as much as they are 12-1 when he pitches, you know what's frustrating about Eduardo Rodriguez? Fifth inning, sixth inning, 100 pitches. Over, over, over again. Last night, he only gave him 5 2/3. And I was happy to hear Cora say, well, yeah, listen, you know, there were some counts here on Trumbo. He had him 0-2. He went full. And that wasn't the only one. Eduardo Rodriguez has to put guys away quicker. And if it's not a strikeout, it's not a strikeout. But he's got to learn to be more economical and efficient with his pitches. And when it comes time to bury a guy, he needs to bury a guy and stop nibbling in those situations. And this does have a direct hand in Justin Haley being on the mound today in the eighth inning. Now, look, fortunately, it's a 5-1 game. So it's not as if it's 2-1. But something tells me here that Alex Cora might have done the same thing with a smaller lead than the 4-run lead he has. And here's why. The first game of this series on Monday night went 12 innings. The Red Sox won it 2-0, but they had to really dip into their bullpen because, again, the game went all night long, or at least close to it. So that was the Stephen Wright game, right? So Stephen Wright got into a little bit of trouble there. Joe Kelly had to come in on the seventh. But basically, you had to get 5 and change out of your bullpen. And then last night, Eduardo Rodriguez only goes 5 2/3. You have a 6-2 lead. Ideally, you'd love for the starter to be able to get some extra outs there and get a little bit later into the game. But Eduardo Rodriguez could not do it. So what happens today? There is a burden on Chris Sale to go out there and give him 7. He gets in the 100-pitch range. And then Cora keeps him out there. Sale gets frustrated, gets ejected. I don't know. Maybe the two are related. Maybe they're not. Maybe he's just mad at the umpire. But now you have Justin Haley in the eighth inning of a game against the Orioles. It'll be interesting to see what Cora does in the ninth, because Haley has gotten out of the eighth. It's still 5-1 now. But Craig Kimbrell has pitched 2 days in a row, and I think 3 out of 4. Okay, because I think he closed the Saturday game that Price pitched against the White Sox. So maybe Joe Kelly closes this game now, but Kelly wasn't available in the eighth. The bottom line is this. You're short in your bullpen. And you're short because on a night where they needed him to, Eduardo Rodriguez couldn't get you another 4 or 5 outs. It would have made a big difference. 617-779-0985. Ryan's in Framingham. He kicks us off tonight. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, Tony, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
So quick question for you. This is actually going back to, I think, Monday's game, the extra innings game. And I wanted to get your take on it and see if it's something that you feel is more of a Cora thing or maybe a Devers thing, maybe not paying attention. So it was in extras. I think it was in the 10th inning when maybe one or two, I'm not sure what the situation was, but Valencia was up and hit a double down the line in extras with nobody on. Obviously, it ended up hurting them. They got out of the inning without him scoring. But in that scenario, I mean, my thought is at that point, you're playing no double defense. There should have been no way that Devers was playing as far off the line as he was. No matter what the scouting report is, I feel like in that scenario, that has to be a no double defense. And he was way off the line. I want to get your take. Do you think that's more of a fundamental thing with Cora? Or maybe, Devers just being young and a bit more inexperienced and maybe not even paying attention.
Well, Ryan, I don't blame Devers, and I'll tell you why. Because if he was in the wrong position, the Red Sox dugout is right there. It's right there. I mean, someone's not watching and can't say, hey, kid, move over. I mean, they're situated on that side of the field. So I don't blame Devers. Now, here's the question. It's like the no doubles defense is sort of a traditional thing. You get in a late innings, you get protecting a lead, or maybe even in that spot, the leadoff man, you don't want to give up second base. You want to have a guy on the lines. That is sort of the traditional way of thinking. I've also talked to managers, Terry Francona among them, who believe that the no doubles sort of approach is kind of a cop-out. It's just a way to cover your ass. Because if you end up giving up a single through the hole and that guy scores on a play that you should have otherwise made, well, then that doesn't do you any good either. So, now look, the Red Sox, it feels to me like they carry some of the defensive alignments a little bit too far. I think teams do it overall in shifting in baseball. I hate the aggressive overshifting. Hate it. I think it's really helped to take some of the offense out of the game. I think it's a problem. And I didn't used to believe this, but it's reached the point with me where I think you need to outlaw shifts. I do. I think you need to do it. And you know, we had Rob Manfred on last year, gave us a stat that shifts have gone from something like from 3,000 to 30,000 in a matter of a couple of years in Major League Baseball. So that's just ridiculous. That's an epidemic. Now, look, I would also say that it depends on the specific matchup. If you watch, and they caught Nesson caught Andrew Benintendi doing this the other night, and it's a good thing to note, and we talked about it earlier in the year. Players have a card with defensive alignments on it, depending on what the batter pitcher matchup is. So the Red Sox changed pitchers the other night, or maybe it was a pinch hitter, I don't remember. Benintendi took off his hat, took out the card, looked at it, and had to remember where to line himself up. So the Red Sox are a little crazy with the defensive alignments. And I think some teams have taken it too far. So just something to keep an eye on. But on that play you're talking about, I don't blame Devers. 617-779-0985. You know, Devers is one of the younger tradable commodities in the Red Sox system. And I'm not telling you they're going to trade him. But their organization is short on minor league talent. I've gone blue in the face trying to tell you about this over recent weeks as the trading deadline approaches. The Red Sox completed a trade yesterday with the Seattle Mariners that brought them a first baseman and outfielder who can hit. By all accounts, he can hit. So the question is, why was he available and why did the Red Sox acquire him? We're going to tell you that story when we come back.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's the thing I find most amazing. Baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okay, I want you to listen closely. Red Sox lead the Orioles 5-1 in the ninth inning. They're now in the bottom of the ninth. And on to close for the Red Sox, Justin Haley. Who? I know that's what you're thinking. Who? Who's closing? Justin Haley. Now you say, who the hell is Justin Haley? Jimmy, would you say he was a fifth round draft pick in 2012? Something like that?
Of course, he was a sixth-round draft pick in 2012 by the Boston Red Sox. Before that, he was drafted by the Cleveland Indians in the 46th round of the 2010 Major League Draft.
Okay.
Low ball two.
So Haley just got one out in the ninth. I told you, I wondered, you know, because they had the 12-inning game the other night. Rodriguez only went 5 2/3 last night. That I thought, well, maybe Kimbrel pitched in the last two, so I thought, well, maybe they're holding Kelly out for the ninth. Stupid me. Kelly is also pitching three of the last four. The Red Sox are really short in the bullpen, which is why Alex Cora called out Eduardo Rodriguez last night a little bit for his inability to go deeper into games. They needed Rodriguez to get deeper into that game. As it is, Brandon Workman, I think, was the first guy out of the bullpen to replace Chris Sale in the seventh, and then Justin Haley. And this should tell you how bad the Orioles are, that the Red Sox can go with Workman and Haley for the final nine outs on the road and win. I think they're going to win. Nobody on, two outs. Yep, they just recorded the second out now. Haley did. So they're on the verge of wrapping this thing up in Baltimore. And I'm watching this Haley kid pitch. Get me a bat. I want to get up there. Like, Murray, you should grab one too, pal. This kid looks like he's throwing pus up there. Meatballs. And the Orioles can't put the ball in play. I don't see much stuff from this kid at all. I want to get to another story here. We'll do that in a second. But first of all, Jeff is in Nashua. Jeff, go.
Hey, Tony. It's funny that you mentioned about the Eduardo Rodriguez stuff, about what Cora said after the game, because I was watching the game live yesterday, and the very first inning, I don't remember which play-by-play guy had it, but he was about three pitches into the game, and they were talking about him, and Rodriguez himself said that he needs to go more than five and two-thirds in a game, and kind of, you know, taking a dig at himself. And what does he do? Go 5 2/3 in the game. And, you know, and it's infuriating to watch this guy pitch, because, you know, I went back to work, I went back to the TV in the third inning, and he was at like 65 pitches in the third inning. It's infuriating to watch that guy. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, so Jeff, look, again, this is not a new problem. They've talked about it before. They've talked about it ad nauseum, and Rodriguez himself, as you noted, has talked about it many times. And it is a problem. Now, look, he's the number five starter. So a lot of teams have number five starters that, you know, that don't go deep into games and really give you a couple of trips through the order. And if you can get five out of them and you have a lead, most times you're happy, which is why I like what Cora said. And I'll ask Jimmy Stewart, our producer, again, to grab the same cut. Cora, after the game, to me, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez is 8-1 with a 3.64 ERA. The team's 12-1 when he pitches. Their only loss was to Oakland in what was a 5-3 game. Rodriguez gave up three runs in that game. So it's not like they got blown out in that game either. And so, to me, you, there's every reason to look at your number five starter and say, well, he's giving you enough. But in the case of Eduardo Rodriguez, the Red Sox expect more. And let me just tell you, by the way, that I think the Baltimore Orioles have come to the realization that Justin Haley's got nothing, because they've just gotten a squib single and then a rocket double to right field. There are now two men on, 5-1 still in the ninth. Okay, two outs. But with regard to Rodriguez, the Red Sox think that this guy could be a middle of the rotation or front end starter. And I didn't say ace. I said front end. Because he's got the stuff. So here's what Cora said about Eduardo Rodriguez after the game.
There were certain at-bats that we felt that he should have put him away. There was an 0-2 on Trumbo, and, you know, he gets to 3-2. All the 3-2 counts, he did the job. I'm not saying that we're not pleased with the result, but I feel that there's more there. There's certain games that, you know, we need our starters to go deeper, and today was one of them.
So the Corey clearly went into that game, and it wouldn't surprise me if either Cora or Dana Lavangi, the pitching coach, went to Eduardo Rodriguez ahead of time and said, hey, look, we need you tonight. We need you to go seven. Seven would be ideal. We really need you to stretch it out. And if you can give us eight, we'll take eight. Like, we'll take whatever you can give us. We had a, you know, we had to use the bullpen a little bit in the series over the weekend. We just went 12 innings on Monday night. We need you to help us out here a little bit. And the game just went final in Baltimore. Red Sox are now 5-1 winners over the Orioles. Justin Haley did record the save, although not before Craig Kimbrell got up to start to warm in the ninth inning. Nonetheless, they sweep the Orioles. But Rodriguez put him in a little bit of a bind there today. Workman had to pitch a seventh, and then Haley pitched the last two innings, all after Chris Sale got ejected. He'd been pulled from the game already. He'd returned to the dugout after a shaky start to the seventh. He returned to the dugout, was ejected because he yelled at the umpire. Workman came in, finished the seventh, and Justin Haley, whoever the heck that is, had to pitch the eighth and the ninth. But I've said this a million times, baseball is the only sport where the games are connected. And when I say that, I mean where who plays or who pitches one night affects who pitches or who plays the next. So you can give me the back-to-back thing in hockey and basketball, but the fact is that for the longest time, none of those sports ever really cared about that sort of stuff. But in baseball, if a pitcher gets knocked out in the first inning and you have to use six relievers to get through the game, the next night, some of those guys might not be able to pitch. And if it happens two nights in a row, then there's a problem. So it is something to sort of, to always watch with the starting pitcher, and they need more out of Eduardo Rodriguez. I keep saying I want to get to this story about the minor leaguer. We will do that in a second, but I want to get to Chip in Norwood. First, Chip, go ahead.
Yes, how you doing, Maz?
I'm good. Go.
Good. I'm just wondering what your view is about the Red Sox situation behind the plate. Do you think Swihart will get more reps or what? Because I just feel that'll be a hole that will affect them in the long run with Vasquez's bat though and everything. What's your view?
So, Chip, you're saying you don't want Swihart to catch anymore?
No, I'm asking you, do you think he'll get some more reps behind the plate to prove himself?
Okay, so look, my guess is not many, if any at all. Cora made a comment here in the last day or so, and I wish I could remember where I read it. But he was asked about the possibility of Swihart catching again, and he said, we'll see. So they clearly did not like what they saw in that first game when Jalen Beeks was on the mound and Swihart was behind the plate. I mean, how could you? Now, I think that that was a reflection on Beeks, but maybe there's something there that we don't know about that the Red Sox feel like Swihart was calling the wrong pitches at the wrong times. I have no idea.
Don't they call most of the pitches from the dugout, with the exception of Price, who calls his own game?
I mean, it depends on the guy, and it depends on the catcher. You know, so it can be done that way. It's a little uncharacteristic. Typically, you want to empower the catcher to call the game. And so, you know, the pitcher ultimately has the right of last refusal, can always say no and decide on something he wants to throw, Jimmy. But in this case, it doesn't feel like Swihart's going to be back there. Remember, when they gave him his first game back there, they told us, they pointed it up, yep, we're going to give him a game behind the plate. Now they're asked and they say, we'll see. So my point, I wouldn't hold your breath on Blake Swihart getting another chance behind the plate anytime soon. 617-779-0985. They are final in Baltimore. Red Sox win again, 5-1 over the Orioles. It's a good way to cure a little stretch of games where you're not playing well, going to Baltimore, beat the crap out of a bad team. How many runs the Red Sox gave up to the Orioles in this series? They won five runs in the three games?
It was four last night.
Boy, the Orioles, really, they blow. They blow. Murray's get your headlines when we come back. And I'll give you some background on a player, a minor leaguer, with potential, with real potential, that the Red Sox acquired from the Seattle Mariners. The question is, why did Seattle give him up? We'll get to that next.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Just looked up and saw Mookie Betts doing the post-game interview up there with Garen Austin on Nesson. Red Sox has wrapped up a 5-1 win over the Baltimore Orioles. You have thoughts on the game, thoughts on the series, by all means. 617-779-0985 is your number here right here on the Baseball Reporters. We'll get to Mookie in a second. I'm waiting to hear from Alex in Watertown, or Alex in Newton, whatever that guy's name is, who loves to bust my grapes all the time about Mookie Betts. I'll get to Mookie in a second. Okay, I'll get to Mookie in a second. But I want to touch on this item that was in both papers today, although there was a little more detail in the Boston Globe that I found interesting. It was an item in Peter Abraham's notebook concerning a deal yesterday that the Red Sox consummated with the Seattle Mariners. If you remember earlier in the year, they sent Roenis Elias, left-handed pitcher. They sent him to the Mariners for a player to be named later. Okay? And so, I think there's a time limit on when those deals have to be done. You know, it's like 90 days oftentimes, or whatever it is. They finalized the deal yesterday. And the Red Sox got a prospect from Seattle named Eric Filia. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing the last name correctly, but I want you to hear me out on this. He's 25 years old. He's an outfielder and a first baseman. And he was just assigned to AA Portland. So AA is a big league, evaluation level in the minor leagues. If a guy can play at AA, more often than not, you think he can play in the big leagues. So Mookie Betts, AA, excelled. Red Sox rushed him to the big leagues. Same with pretty much with Ben Attendi, even Jackie Bradley. Now, it didn't work out for him the way it did for the other two, but you get the idea. So now I'm reading directly from Peter Abraham's item in the Globe. Okay, Filia was the number 14 prospect in the Seattle organization prior to this season. Now, number 14, you say, well, that's not super high, but it's not god-awful either. There might be a little bit of ability there. And usually these guys, as players to be named, are nothing acquisitions. But listen to this. He is a career 343 hitter with an 888 OPS in three minor league seasons. So 3 years in the minors, he's batted 343 with an OPS of 888. He also hit 408 for Peoria in the Arizona Fall League. And that was last fall, 2017. Now, look, I'm not going to overrate what he hit in the Fall League. And I would tell you that guys who play in the West and put up good minor league numbers, oftentimes altitude, whether it, depending on the league, but those guys can put up inflated numbers. There's a million guys like that who've played in the minors out West. Okay? But Abraham goes on. Here's the catch, he writes. Filia was suspended for 50 games in January after a second positive test for a drug of abuse. So not PEDs, for a drug of abuse. And the collective bargaining agreement in the minor leagues highlights what the drugs of abuse are. Okay, so now I'm reading from another different story. But the drugs of abuse are marijuana, hashish, THC, synthetic THC, cocaine, LSD, opiates, ecstasy, GHB, and PCP.
So it's likely weed.
Okay, so Murray, can you pretty much tell me what all those are?
Yeah, how the hell do you not know what everything on there is?
Well, I don't know everything on there. Like GHB, should I know what GHB is?
Yeah, that's unfortunately something you wouldn't want to have done to you. That's normally known as the date rape drug as well.
Ah, all right, date rape drug. So I see the same thing, Murray, and I see marijuana, and I said, well, maybe this guy got popped for marijuana. I'll give you a little more info on that in a minute.
Oh, scoops.
Not a scoop, just some detail about whether or not it could be marijuana. But the story that Abraham writes goes on. So again, let me back up here for a second. Abraham writes, Filia was suspended for 50 games in January after a second positive test for a drug of abuse. That cost him an invitation to spring training. So this guy didn't get an invite to spring training because he got popped the second time. Okay? He also missed the 2015 season at UCLA after he was caught plagiarizing part of a philosophy paper, and he was suspended for the 2014-15 school year. The UCLA Daily Bruin reported that Filia spent part of that year out of school working as a butler at the Playboy Mansion. I love that detail. I do. I just think that that's funny. So, after he returned from his suspension, he batted 426 in 33 games for Double-A Arkansas. Okay, again, Double-A. He had 426 after he came back. Dave Dombrowski was asked about the kid's history. And he said the team, quote, did a lot of homework on Filia and was comfortable in acquiring him. Portland manager Darren Fenster knows Filia well. He was on Pedroia's coaching staff in 2017. So let me summarize for you. For Roenis Elias, the Red Sox have a kid who's a 343 career hitter in the minor leagues. Not a ton of power, but nonetheless, 343 is 343. Okay? Three minor league seasons, he batted 343. He was popped for 50 games for testing positive for a drug of abuse, not a PED, a drug of abuse. And that, the suspension, cost him an invitation to spring training. He was busted for plagiarism in college. He worked as a butler at the Playboy Mansion. He then came back from the suspension and hit 426 at Double A. And it was 13 games, not 33. My mistake. 13 games at Double A. He hit 426. Are you okay with the Red Sox acquiring a player like this? Jim Murray, Jimmy Stewart, are you okay with the Red Sox taking a chance on a player like this?
Yeah, what the hell do I care? America's built on second chances.
Jimmy?
He'll never make it out of Pawtucket, Rhode Island.
Okay, but that aside, are you okay with them taking a chance?
No, it shows how desperate they are for talent. And I know this is going to be to your point, Tony, but I thought we had criteria for types of players who are welcome into the Red Sox organization. I guess we've thrown that all out the window.
Okay, so to me, that's my takeaway on it. And we've spent a lot of time here over the last couple of weeks in particular talking about the Red Sox farm system, how they have relatively little to deal. They have no prospects because they've drafted poorly. It doesn't feel like there's a lot down there. So what do? The player to be named that they get from the Seattle Mariners is a guy who's been popped, at least suspended, 50 games. Who knows how many tests he failed? And again, I'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, but there's guys that you can point to as well that have had shady drug-related pasts, like Josh Hamilton or even more recently Evan Gattis, where after they've figured things out, it has worked out for them at the major league level.
So again, I sort of have mixed feelings on this. On the one hand, I say,
I mean, it's so barren, why not take a shot?
Okay, so that's really ultimately the point, Murray.
But that's not who you are. You're the Boston Red Sox. You shouldn't have to take a shot on players.
Okay, they shouldn't have to, but that's where they are. That's where they are in their minor league development. And to me, this should really tell you. This is how desperate they are for players down there. That they would take on a kid who has this many red flags. And I call him a kid. He's 25. I don't think it's a stretch to say this kid's got a character problem. He was popped for plagiarism. He's suspended for 50 games for a drug of abuse. And what I was able to ascertain earlier in the day, because I made a couple of phone calls, you might be right, Murray. It might be weed. It might be nothing more than weed. But to get suspended for weed in the minors, you've got to fail like as many tests as Josh Gordon did. And I'm talking about the wide receiver with the Cleveland Browns, who got suspended for a whole year. He missed an entire season.
Like, you got to be smoking bales of it.
Well, and you just can't stop. You can't give it up. So with this kid, and again, that's assuming that's what it is. Maybe it's something worse. I just read you the whole list of potential drugs that he could have tested positive for.
Chi-Chi, go get the Yale.
And then there's also this element, like when you
plagiarize the drug prescription.
So when you talk about the kid's ability, this is a quote from Jerry DePoto, the general manager of the Mariners, and he said this in January. So this is before spring training even began. Okay, he says, it's not your normal outfield corner power profile, but he can really hit and he gets on base. And if you can do those two things, you're going to play in the big leagues. So again, DePoto said this about this guy in January.
Okay, so why is he 25 and not in the big leagues?
Okay, he was drafted out of college, so he was 22 when they drafted. But again, you know part of the reason why. Because he's a character problem. So he goes on. My suspicion is that now the rest of the world is kind of taking note that Eric Filia is probably going to play in the big leagues. And that's saying a lot for a fifth-year senior sign. Okay, so again, he was signed as a fifth-year senior out of UCLA. And as a 25-year-old who was playing in A-ball, he's kind of turning himself into a pretty good story. So that's what DePoto said about this kid, Eric Filia, whom the Red Sox acquired. And in order to get popped 50 games, he didn't just fail one marijuana test. He failed a bunch. He got suspended from school for plagiarism in college. And the Red Sox were willing to acquire this guy because they don't have anything else in the minor leagues. We'll go back to your phones, and let me try that again. Mike is in. Jimmy, you're going to have to punch him up. Mike in Newton, if you would, on line two. Go ahead, Mike. Oh, he's being screened at the moment. I'm sorry. Oh, all right. So now he's up there. Here we go. Mike, what do you got?
Oh, hey. Yeah, I was just calling about this trade. I was thinking, like, this kid seems like he has good stats. You know what I mean? So if, and I'm sorry, I don't know if my phone sucks. I have a headset on.
No, but, you're all right. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah. So this kid seems like he has good potential. So the thing is, if someone has problems in their life or they're like a bad kid when they're 19 or 20 or whatever, you can figure that out, you know what I mean? But Elias, what has he done? You know what I mean? He sucks. What are you going to get out of him?
So Mike, I'm not... No one's lamenting the loss of Rowenis Elias, but let me ask you this question. If the Red Sox had, I would say, even an average minor league system, okay, let's say they were average, and right now they're ranked 24th out of 30, do you think they would have acquired this kid?
Oh, no.
Okay. I mean, I thought you were going to say more there. Apparently, you don't have much more to say. There's no shot that they acquire the kid if they have talent in their minor league system. They're taking a shot because they're barren. They have nothing down there. Zippo. So they'll take a chance on a character guy. Now, would it really be a neat trick is if Dombrowski can flip this kid by July 31st and get something for him. But given the fact that he was just popped for 50 games, I doubt it.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz, 98.